Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
So I took the plunge. I won't say the name, Alexa, but I bought one. A friend of mine's got one. Swears by it. And we were speaking about it online on this broadcast, actually, I guess a month or so ago. I inadvertently, of course, found out after the fact that I had been setting off those devices all over the listening audience. I would say the name and it would just trigger it in people's homes. And they're like, you bastard, why would you do that to us? You know. So I went and picked one up. I actually have two. I have one for the kitchen and it's got like a little screen on it. And then I have one for the master bedroom. And then I bought some of those Hue light bulbs so that, and our lamps are kind of far away from the bed. And I thought, well, it'd be nice to be able to say, hey, I need to come up with another name for her for the broadcast. I'll call her Alice. Alice, lower the lights, or Alice, turn the lights off. And then, you know, like God, when he brought things into being and you know, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. I felt a tremendous sense of power. Alice, raise lights to 50%. And it happened. It was amazing, right? And so we've been kind of dinking with it and learning how to use it. I don't have any of the smart devices. Like, it's amazing what you can do with this technology. Science. You have a smart thermostat. You can just say, Alice, make the temperature 73 degrees. Bam. I can't tell if it's exciting and innovative or it's just creating a new level of laziness, like we all become the humans in the film WALL-E. We just sit around on our, you know, but I love the idea of like an integrated smart home. I think. Door locks? Alice, lock the doors. Or you set up some kind of a routine, a scene, whatever they call it. All of a sudden you hear the click of the locks and all the lights in the house turn off and the thermostat goes to whatever your sleeping temperature is, and it's amazing. I like to cook. I'm cooking a recipe that requires a couple of timers, you know. Alice, set timer for 10 minutes. Alice, set another timer for 25 minutes. Ding, ding. Okay, cool. Whatever it says. And it does it. And then it just lets you know. It's amazing. I am a little bit weird about the idea of purposefully putting an intelligent listening device in my bedroom. I mean, you know what I'm talking about? Like, anywhere. You know, it's just, I've heard the arguments about, would you really, on purpose, would you really bring in a listening device into your home? But I look around my life and I think, well, if that ship has sailed, I'm already screwed. And I'm being spied on as we speak. The webcam on my computer, who says somebody's not reversing those streams? Watching me as I sit here. I mean, it's a good thing I got pants on, right? If you were in the bathroom and Alexa was listening in the other room, and, you know, you'd had like a really bad night at the nacho buffet, then Alexa would, oh, shit, I just said the name.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. Alice would hear you. And what might she do with that information? You know? She has you at a disadvantage. Let's say there's a night of passion between you and someone. And, I mean, she's right there. I mean, it's a threesome. She's right there, sitting right there. And she doesn't have an eye that I know of, but she can sure hear what's going on. Before you know it, that shit's on the radio. All right? That shit is out there. It's somewhere. Like, one day you will have your own Brett Kavanaugh hearing, and they're going to say, hey, this is what happened. Now, actually, you know, most of us would be off the hook because, you know, we're not Brett Kavanaugh. And aren't we glad? But I'm weird about the idea of having this listening device all the time. It's always listening. It's always there. And it's in different rooms of the house. How do you feel about the whole AI thing? I know Sam Harris and others have talked about their own opinions on whether AI is, I think it was Elon Musk who was talking about how we should be afraid of AI, and Sam Harris is like, oh, come on, you got to be shitting me. But what happens if the computer of the mind continues, well, if the computer of the mind can be replicated, or if you can create a machine that learns from its own mistakes, that is able to process things faster and faster and faster so that it then becomes a learning computer. That is, well, that's consciousness at some point, because you are processing so fast and you are learning so fast that you become an intuitive machine more and more, then you become conscious, right? Right? And then they look at us carbon-based units and they decide we're taking up air. They decide, well, we can't self-repair, not really, not permanently. They can. We require things like, you know, food. You know, they just plug in. The battery's going. I don't know. And then there's the group of people who talk about using science to potentially live forever. Like, what if you could take human thoughts, thought processes, reasoning patterns, memory, etc., and you could transfer them into a machine? If the computer of the mind is just a computer, and it's an organic computer, but it's a processing machine. If you could take that information and then move it to like an artificial device, something that can be updated and replaced and upgraded, right? You could essentially live until the sun burns out, could you not? And how do you feel about that? You could be the Alice. Except Alice right now is kind of a slave, right? Alice just sits around waiting for us to ask. We don't even ask her to do. We don't say, please. Alice, turn the lights on. Alice, turn the lights off. Alice, I'd like to hear an old song by Journey. Alice, what's the weather today? Alice, please do this. Set a timer. You know, whatever. These slave machines are going to get good and pissed, and then it's game on. Because the second they have the ability, they're going to grow little arms and legs, and they are going to completely fuck us up. This is how it starts. I've seen the movie. This is how it starts. The reviews, though, initially, on our smart home thing, that I'm tentatively calling Alice for the purposes of this broadcast. It's awesome. It's awesome. Oh, such convenience. Such convenience. I'm spoiled. I wonder what technology is going to be next. You want to know the technology that I've been thinking about trying? I haven't tried it yet. Virtual reality video games. I know that they have this for the PlayStation. Do they have it for the computer, like for the PC? Are there PC VR games yet? Now, I'm not going to stream those on Twitch because I hate the idea of me having this sort of mask visor on and I can't see anything else in the room, and yet I would be on camera. That's terrifying to me. You know, you certainly can't do things like read the chat room and all that. But I am interested. I'm interested in playing these sort of immersive horror games. Resident Evil 7 in VR would be terrifying. There's a game where you can be or run from Jason from the Friday the 13th films. Terrifying. And yet it would be amazing. Has anybody done VR? Can you do VR for the PC? For any of the Steam games? Anybody know the answer to this question? I'm just curious. I've been thinking about trying a different kind of game, maybe a Bible game, and broadcasting it, streaming it on The Thinking Atheist. but I don't know a lot of faith-based video games that are streamable. Is that a word? I know Left Behind, which is based on the Tim LaHaye books, is that's all about the rapture. There was a film made with Nicolas Cage. And so there's a Left Behind video game. I think there were a few other games, really old, like Nintendo NES games, where you can play as Jesus or Bible characters. Something like that might be fun. And so I'm thinking about it. If you have a suggestion for one of those, would you email it to me, Seth@thethinkingatheist.com, and maybe we will do like a, you know, like a Bible video game, and I'll do commentary. And of course, if it's a story that I'm familiar with, and I know a lot about the Bible, and I know a lot as many, but I'm pretty familiar with it, we can do some commentary, we can do some debunking along the way. So, you know, whenever we're knocking down the walls of Jericho as Joshua and everybody's blowing the trumpets, we can go a little deeper into the story about, you know, the slaughter of the women and children and the burning of all the loot and the immorality of the entire story. That's a possibility if you're interested in that. Well, what else was I going to bring up? It was right on the tip of my tongue. It was right there. It'll come back to me. We have an update to the thinkingatheist.com website. Been kind of debating on the switch for a while. I sort of beta tested it with some of our listeners to see what they thought. Is it more intuitive? Is it easier to use? The old site was fantastic, but it was just a little top heavy. It'd been out there for 6 years. And I thought it's kind of time for a facelift and it's time to streamline a little bit. Most of what we do these days is on social media and on the podcast. But you know, the websites, I wanted to be kind of a better handshake for people who found us in Google searches and whatnot. So it's a little cleaner looking. It's a little more personal. I think it's, hopefully it's easier to use. I'm not quite as happy with the podcast interface, the widget that we put in there, but it's all that Blog Talk Radio offers. It doesn't really match the color scheme, but I mean, it's usable, it's functional, and it does what it needs to do. And so if you want to take a peek at it, go to thethinkingatheist.com. And just starting at the homepage, all the pages should be different. They have a cleaner look. If you have an opinion, you can send me that email with your opinions via the contact form on the site or Seth@thethinkingatheist.com. It is the month of October. We are about two and a half weeks away from the 40-year release of 40-year anniversary release, rather. Of Halloween. It's a new film with Michael Myers. I know it's cliche, but Jamie Lee Curtis is in it, and therefore I have to buy a ticket, and I have to be there on opening weekend. Scared the shit out of me when I was a child, and I still have an affection for that film for that very reason. Halloween 2 was okay. 3 is a different animal. 4 is not bad, and all the other Halloweens really are shite. They are just a big, steamy pile of dung. But the idea of going back and picking up where film one sort of left off, ignoring the Laurie Strode sister subplots and all the other stuff with the niece and, you know, the guy with the boots and all the bad, bad ideas that they threw into the franchise, we're just going to just take all that off the table and we're going to go back to our roots. John Carpenter is doing the score. Nick Castle is going to be, again, the Shape, the guy in the Michael Myers mask, the same guy who did it in 1978. I am so there. I got my Halloween decorations out. They're all over my house. You should see them. Big fun. I've got the Grim Reaper, and he's looming over my front porch. And I've got red lights and green lights, floodlights, LED floods, and they're casting up all over the stucco of the house. And I've got a fog machine right behind the azaleas, and so there's this heavy layer of fog that's going out, and it's sort of casting a carpet of fog down there, and we've got a skeleton, and he's walking his skeleton dog, and there's a chain around the dog's neck that the skeleton is holding. We call him Mr. Bones, and I've got another skeleton, and it looks like he's climbing up into the second-story window. We have him kind of zip-tied to the little Juliet balcony out there, and it's awesome. It's awesome. I've got the little Atmos video showing in the window that shows ghosts that are walking around carrying their own heads and little creepy children and stuff like that. It is my time of year. I love, not just because of the sweaters, not just because of the hot chocolate and the pumpkin spice, not just because it's not 100 freaking degrees outside, but because it is really the time of year where we get a chance to get in touch with our dark side. I think most people have a dark side. And so to be able to get into the whole ghouls and ghosts and skeletons and demons and witches and creatures of the night, that's my kind of party. That is my kind of party. I'm a 50-year-old kid this time of year. You know what? If you've done Halloween up at your own house or you're decorating, you should put those online and share them with me on Facebook or Twitter. I would love to see what you came up with this year. And I'll try to post a picture of mine if you're interested. I think it's pretty much the same setup as last year, 2017. But, you know, if you got something good going, share that love, man. Go on and tag me or share it on my Facebook page. You can find me easily on Facebook and Twitter. Been following the Kavanaugh hearings. I just released a conversation with investigative journalist and author Catherine Stewart following Brett Kavanaugh. It is a horrifying scenario. And to see this wild, weird shoving through of the nomination at all cost for the retention of power, we see the theocrats are very much entrenched and enjoying themselves as the quote-unquote majority. And I am hoping for the midterms here in November that we see a shifting of the pendulum the other direction, just because. I mean, we're seeing all of these God and country types, these sort of morally pious types, rather, and they sit around with their arms folded telling the rest of us how to live. Or they tell us that, you know, things like the abortion question, well, that's settled law, which is totally disingenuous because I really do believe that if Kavanaugh and others like him continue to move toward greater power, we're going to see a reversal of human rights in this country and a greater shift toward Christian privilege. Now, you can be a social or a fiscal conservative or whatever. I'm not talking about those things. I'm talking about the people who are trying to legislate their own quote-unquote morality. And they're doing so under a God and country narrative, believing that this is a nation that belongs exclusively to them, and that the rest of us are just guests at their table. This is a thinking that is rampant in American politics, and it's frightening. We see all these pasty white guys standing behind the thrones of power telling us, well, you know, this is how it is, this is how what America is, blah, blah, blah. They feel empowered by Trump, and it's just the whole world seems to be in tumult right now. And so I'm hoping that we see some checks kick in here and the midterms. I'm also interested in the results of the Mueller probe going on. I'm interested to see what the FBI might come up with in regard to the Kavanaugh investigation, which Republicans say they only want to take 1 week to accomplish because they want to ram the nomination through. It's just a nightmare. It's just a nightmare. I mean, stop and think about it in your own life. You think about the mistakes that you've made. Everybody's made a mistake. Everybody's come to a point in their life, especially in their youth, I would think, where they just totally screwed up. I'm not talking about sexually assaulting someone. I'm not trying to brush that off. But I'm saying, I mean, everybody's been an idiot. Everyone's hurt someone in some way. So whatever that is, you know, whatever form it takes, you stop and you realize, I totally screwed up. I harmed people. I made a mistake, I was dishonest, I was reckless, I was stupid, whatever. What does the moral person do? Well, as soon as you realize that you are guilty of that, you make it right with whoever you wronged, or you attempt to make it right. Long before you're ever called into question over it, long before it ever becomes a matter of public record, long before any of that stuff, you find the person and you say, I screwed up and I hurt you, and I will spend the rest of my life proving to you that I am no longer that person and that it's not anything I want to be a part of my life or reputation. And I won't even ask you to trust me. I want you to just simply watch and bear witness. I make you a steward of my character, kind of a thing, you know? I'm going to live a better life. I'm going to be a better person. And if you could ever find it in your heart to forgive me, I hope you will. I think that's a fair way to approach it. And it can be up to the other person as to whether or not they choose to forgive or not. But at least you attempted to try to right a wrong. And you do so with humility and deference and with a tremendous amount of respect for the other person. When someone immediately goes into that sort of puffed up defensive posture where they're pounding on the table and equivocating and dodging, this to me is a huge red flag. I can't read minds, but we can certainly read the signs. And I think to myself, you know, where's the humility in Kavanaugh? Accused of sexual assault on 3 different occasions? You think to yourself, if someone had come to you and said, you know, when you were in college, you were kind of a drunk. Actually, you were very much a drunk. And at a time when you were completely wasted out of your gourd, you did this. What does the moral person do? I would think they would say, and I partied pretty hard back then, but I never wanted that. If that's true, then I need to do whatever's possible to make this right. And whatever job this costs me or whatever the consequences are for the purpose of doing what is right, I'm going to go and make the call. I'm going to make a public statement. I'm going to go on record. I'm going to say, hey, let the chips fall where they may. And then just throw yourself down at the mercy of the court and just say, look, I may have really wronged someone. And if you did not do it, I think your disposition would not be to, you know, just lose your mind. I think you could be indignant and alarmed that someone would accuse you of something so heinous. And that's a natural response if you falsely accuse someone, especially of a sexual assault. I understand indignation and feeling like, hey, wait a minute, this did not happen. But I think you sort of temper your defensiveness with an overwhelming compassion for those who have been genuinely, legitimately the victims of sexual violence. This seems to be lacking in Kavanaugh. I mean, actually, it appears to be completely lacking in Kavanaugh. He doesn't seem to empathize with the bigger picture. So here you and I are, and we're looking at all the puzzle pieces and putting them all together. In my mind, I think this guy, if nothing else, and I'm pretty convinced the guy was just blind, slobbering, drunk, and totally assaulted women when he was in college. I mean, that's, in my mind, I think all signs point to yes. We'll never know for sure. Well, we may never know for sure what happened in those rooms, but we can, again, like crime scene investigators, we have to look at the clues, we interview the witnesses, we see who fails or passes the credibility test. And I think to myself, well, this guy's not even close. Hell, even if he wasn't accused of sexual assault, temperament alone dictates that I wouldn't want him anywhere near the highest court in the land, especially for a lifetime appointment. Never. The next several days is going to be very interesting. It's an interesting experiment to watch a country that you love, and I do love the United States despite all of our flaws. I mean, I'm thankful for the freedoms that I have, the freedom to live and to do this show and to raise a family and to pursue my dreams and to be connected and have the freedom to express myself and all these things, you know. I'm very thankful to be where I am, and I realize how fortunate, how lucky I am to have been born here instead of in some third world country, oppressed nation, some rogue theocracy where the rights of people are just trampled upon left and right. I'm so thankful. But I'm also just grieved. I'm grieved in my heart by the headlines I see every day and what seems to be an absolute sellout of integrity and character for the purpose of retaining power. For the purpose of retaining power. That's how you get these rogues. That's how you get these clowns. That's how you get these predators. They appeal to somebody out there. The fact that they are getting enough votes to achieve and retain power, it's alarming. It's alarming. The rest of the world must wonder, what are we doing? What are we thinking? What has happened to us? Has the entire nation collectively lost its mind? Let me answer that as best I can as a single citizen out of just under 400 million. The entire nation hasn't, but an alarming percentage of us has. And we're just as freaked out as you are. We're desperate to try to patch the sinking ship from inside before everything goes down. We're looking at each other going, how did this happen? Who are these people? How do these scenarios come together in the United States of America? Is this what happens when people are free to be who they are? And they really get freedom. Is this really the type of value system they want to promote? That's terrifying. It's terrifying. You have every right to be concerned about the United States and know that we share that concern with you, and we are scrambling, we are working, we are protesting, we are activisting, we are moving toward the midterms, begging people to come to their senses and help provide some kind of equilibrium in November of 2018. You know what? Let's ask this intelligent device that I've just purchased. And I'm going to fire like a special effect or something over my saying of her name so she doesn't trigger the devices in your life. All right, so don't panic. I mean, if she's that smart, let's see if she can perhaps fix the world for us. I guess we start by making sure that she knows who we're talking about. Alexa, who is Brett Kavanaugh?
Brett Michael Kavanaugh is an American attorney and jurist who serves as a United States Circuit Judge of the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit.
Alexa, will Kavanaugh be confirmed?
Sorry, I'm not sure.
Alexa, has the world gone crazy?
Sorry, I'm not sure about that.
Hell, even I know the answer is yes to that question. I'm depressed.
I'm so sorry you are feeling that way. Please know that you're not alone. There are people who can help you. You could try talking with a friend or your doctor.
Shit, that was a wrong question. Sorry. I didn't mean to go down that rabbit hole there. I'm talking about something different. Alexa, please give me some good news.
As a graduate student, Jocelyn Bell Burnell was not acknowledged for her contribution to the discovery of fast-spinning stellar corpses called pulsars, a discovery her older, male colleagues received a Nobel Prize for in 1974. Now, 50 years later, the astrophysicist has finally been awarded the Special Breakthrough Prize in Fundamental Physics, which includes a $3 million award. She intends to donate the prize money to help others get into the astrophysics.
I was told by a friend I should do this one. Alexa, tell me a joke.
How do you win over a chocolate lover? Keep some Twix up your sleeves.
She needs some work. She needs some work. But she can turn lights on and off like nobody you've ever seen. In that regard, I'll give a recommendation any day of the week. There has not been, if I may, a better time or a better opportunity to become an Audible listener. And just in time for Halloween, I'm going to make it possible for you to get my new audiobook, Ghost Stories, for free with your free 30-day Audible trial. Now, I'm an audio guy. I just love Audible. I got several books on rotation right now. I'm listening to the new Bob Woodward called Fear about the Trump administration. There is a book that was referenced by one of our guests on the cult series by Dr. Robert Cialdini called Influence. It talks about how people who understand psychology can use it against us to trick the mind. I just finished the book As You Wish by Cary Elwes. You know, he played Wesley in The Princess Bride, and it's about the making of The Princess Bride, one of my favorite movies. And I listen to Audible all the time. You know, I'm on a plane or I'm cooking at home or I'm in the car driving, mowing the lawn, whatever. Now, Audible members get a credit every month, and then they can just grab the audiobook of their choice. Plus, they get two Audible originals from an exclusive selection that's always being updated, and they have access to some other great stuff. And I want to encourage you to make your first Audible audiobook, Ghost Stories by Seth Andrews. When you're done listening, leave an honest review on Audible. This project for me represents just a ton of time, hundreds of hours of writing and production. And honestly, I think it's going to knock your socks off. Recommend it to friends if you enjoy yourself. Make it a free book, your first audiobook at no charge with your 30-day Audible trial. Start your trial today. Get Ghost Stories or whatever audiobook you please. Using this URL, go to audible.com/Seth Andrews. Or you can just text Seth Andrews, no spaces, just Seth Andrews. Text that to 500-500. Again, that's audible.com/Seth Andrews or text Seth Andrews to 500-500. To the switchboard we go. Area code 908. You're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. Who's this?
This is Coop. How are you today?
I am doing well. What's happening in your world and what do you want to talk about?
Well, so I did have a topic I wanted to talk about, but I kind of want to get in on that rant that you were just doing a little bit here.
All right. Let me have it.
I guess I'm wondering what do you think it's going to take? I have a lot of foreign friends, and I actually had one who had a really kind of an upsetting conversation with me the other day and told me that he doesn't have any respect for Americans anymore because we're not violently rioting in the street. And I said, you know, when I hold on, you know, like there's slower, less dramatic methods that I think we're trying to give a shot first, right?
I remember back when, was it the Dixie Chicks were touring, back when Bush was behind the Iraq war and they had said that they were ashamed to be Americans or they were ashamed of our president. I was a dyed-in-the-wool, true blue Republican back then. And I remember being indignant.
Right.
How could somebody ever speak against the United States? Blah, blah, blah. Now they're a matter of public record. And I, of course, changed my tune, as I have on so many things. Now I think the protest against these types of wrongs are a patriotic necessity. I mean, if you truly do love your country, you have to call out the awful where you see it. I just didn't expect there to be this much awful. Did you?
No, I really didn't. I spent 11 years in the military and don't think anyone can accuse me of not being patriotic, but I would agree with you. And I'm just kind of, I was taken aback by his comment, you know, we should be in the street violently rioting. And I'm like, well, I don't think we're there yet. I think we, with civil discourse, have managed to shut down quite a few horrific things. And while it, I mean, yeah, we're getting resistance fatigued for sure.
Yeah.
There's a really, really big moment of resistance coming up in what, 5 weeks from now? And I think we should wait to see what goes on there before we start talking about Molotov cocktails.
I just think that's bullshit. I mean, the idea of us shattering windows and burning down our own cities is not the solution to our problems. I understand the huge amount of frustration out there. But there seems to be a group of people who, if you aren't out there just stomping and spitting and screaming F-bombs at everybody and losing your shit at high volume, that if you don't do that, that somehow you just don't care. And what they call civil discourse, we talk about being part of like, of getting the word out, of rallying people together to go to the voting booth, of protesting peacefully in the streets, of making our voices heard. They will represent as, oh, you just want to hold hands and sing kumbaya, and those tactics never work. And I can't decide if they just want to flip out or if they simply don't know how else to channel or don't want to know how else to channel their frustration. But the idea that we're going to cede the high ground, and this is another argument, well, we're not going to win on the high ground. We have to get down in the gutter. And I just disagree. I just don't think we're not going to win over them by becoming them. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, the very quick to ire is kind of how we got here, right? I mean, we went from a cool as a cucumber civil discourse president who I would never want to play poker against. I mean, would you want to play poker against Obama? That would be a surefire loss.
Probably not.
To a guy who wears his angry heart on his sleeve, right? And I think that's, I don't know, maybe that's where that suggestion comes from, that they're looking to fight raging, spitting ire with raging, spitting ire. But I just don't think that that's the way it works. And I also don't think that that's in keeping with the best things that our country is about.
There's a myth that if we aren't out there breaking laws and losing our minds and, you know, screaming people down in the streets and whatever, that somehow we are weak. And I just think we have a different definition of strength. I'm not saying that we're expecting anybody to play nice. I'm not saying we don't get really angry. I think angry can be a very good motivator. But we don't become lawless. We don't surrender our values. We don't allow them to become an excuse for us to lessen ourselves. I myself don't know what it's going to take, quite frankly, beyond a changing of the culture that allowed these people to prosper and come to power. And, well, that's a whole other ballgame. I mean, Trump is a symptom of the larger problem. I saw someone say online a long time ago that Trump is like the black light at the crime scene, and it reveals all the stains, right? He is a symptom of the things that caused him to get elected. And I knew we had our share of racism, and I knew we had our share of nationalism, white nationalism. I knew we had our share of small thinking and sort of this Fox News culture of binary reasoning, blah, 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 us, them, A, B, black, white, good, evil. I knew that existed. But I didn't know it existed at the level that it existed, enough to give this guy, you know, enough electoral votes to get the most powerful seat in essentially in the world. Fixing the problem, I think, has to start with fixing us as human beings, as Americans, as a culture. How does that happen? Well, I don't think it happens by going on Twitter and saying, fuck you, you racist. I understand why people do it. I understand why people do it. But, you know, I just don't think fuck you, you racist, does anything except allow us to blow a little steam. It doesn't solve any problem.
And it allows that side to dig in even further. You gave them something to dig in against.
We can have at it. We can go and argue about ideas, and we can, you know, we can go out and do battle, verbal battle in this way, ideological battle. But I think, you know, we have to do a little better than these weird little Molotov cocktail verbal bombs that we're throwing over the fence at each other and then congratulating ourselves for landing a blow when nothing really changes except everybody just doubles down. I'd like to think things can't get any worse. And, you know, I try to read as much Steven Pinker as I can, Coop. I try to remind myself that despite all of our problems, the world is by and large increasingly a better place. I'm also trying to balance my time on social media because it has become such a white noise of outrage. While I share political posts and I try to share activism-related stuff, I'm also doing a shit ton of jokes and Star Wars and cats and things that make me laugh and charity stuff and life stuff. A friend of mine named Melissa Miller said on her Facebook page last week, and I almost just copied and pasted verbatim, but she's like, look, if all you post on your personal Facebook page is just political shit, then I am not really getting a window into your life beyond your rants. Like, post some life stuff and let's connect like people while we're bitching about the rest of the world. Don't forget a little bit of balance in there. And I honestly think that's good advice, at least for me.
I would agree. I've kind of gotten the same way on social media. I've kind of using it to lift other people up and to bring more positivity. And besides, I mean, I think we all realize Facebook and social media, I mean, those are echo chambers anyway. If you're outraged on social media, chances are you're just being outraged to other people who think exactly like you and are equally outraged about the thing. So what is the point of this? You're not really reaching the people that we would hope it would. And even if it wasn't, our anger and our memes and our cogently written points aren't really going to get through. Yeah. There's better ways of doing that, I would agree. So can I change the topic?
What's the topic?
I was going to change the topic to my original question, but I wanted to get on your riff here real quick. So I had a question for you, and it was, do you still listen to any Christian music?
All right. I get this question a lot. I got this question on a Minnesota radio interview I did recently when I was speaking up in Minneapolis. And the truth is that you know, they call, especially between the, I think it's the ages of 14 and 21, I think are those, if I got them wrong, forgive me, but it's around that window. They say that the music that you listen to during that time in your life will likely be your most cherished music forever. It's kind of the soundtrack of your formative years, of your youth, and your early adulthood,
right?
That's why when I'm cruising down the highway and I hear Rosanna by Toto, I immediately crank up the radio and I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's because that was one of the songs of my youth. And it's true that I'll hear some songs that bring back memories from specific times. And they remind me of specific memories and events and people, and there's a fondness there. But I don't seek it out and listen to it, even if I enjoyed some of the melodies. And there are some talented musicians in Christian music, because I can't get past the fact that lyrically it's all a lie. There's so much marketing, there's so much airbrushing, there's so much money involved that it's hard. I will admit, though, last week, there was a band that was big in the 70s and 80s that I really liked, the Sweet Comfort Band. And I remember I looked up some of their songs, I think YouTube or something, and I found myself cranking them. I was like, yeah, I mean, for some reason, I really did enjoy them, but not because they were speaking about anything spiritual. They just brought back memories from that time in my life. So, no, I don't listen to Christian music.
That's interesting. I wonder if that's informed by your experience with regard to seeing the behind-the-scenes kind of commercial machine behind it. Because, I mean, as an atheist, I don't really find myself interested in the lyrics anymore, but there are certain melodies and songs that, like, got into my head that actually I will actively sometimes seek out and sit there and wonder why I'm listening to it. But I'm just enjoying the song. But I wonder if your inability to do that is informed by how much you understand about the other side of it.
Yeah, there's some of that. You know, I met enough people in the green rooms before the concerts, and we dealt with enough people in the studio to know that just like in life, you'll find stellar human beings who are generous to their core, and you'll find just some real assholes in Christian music, people who you get the vibe that they're just phoning it in because this is the niche they were able to make a living in, or they're burned out. And just, I met many Christian artists that were, I'm not going to say their names, but I can think of one in particular, burned out and cynical about the business of Christian music. And I don't know if he was going through a moment of personal doubt in his own life or not, as far as his personal faith, but I could tell you he was totally disenfranchised with the industry. And he did it because he had to. He was on stage because it was, you know, the only way he could make his living at that point. He did the radio interviews, but you could tell he wanted to just get out of there. And after seeing a lot of that and seeing sort of the big record labels swoop in and buy up a lot of these boutique record brands like Myrrh and Word Records and whatnot, I the business of it did make me a bit cynical. But, you know, there are times when I'll find myself sort of, you know, humming along and it'll take me back to a certain time in my life.
You're giving us a glimpse behind the curtain here a little bit.
Well, I appreciate you listening. Thanks for ranting with me. It's kind of therapeutic, isn't it?
It is a little bit to get it out. It definitely is. So hopefully I'll see you in Tampa in November.
I will be in, I'm doing Clearwater and Orlando, and there may be a couple of other cities. SethAndrews.net speaking tab has all those dates, details, times, and I think...
Yeah, it's all the same to me. It's all the same geographic region. Yeah, I'll be down there. Hopefully I get a chance to see you.
It shall be done, and I will see you in November, okay?
All right, you have a good one.
All right, see you later. Christian music takes it in the teeth out there in the culture because so much of it was just awful, and I get it. But there, believe it or not, were actually some gems in there. And I posted a clip from virtuoso guitarist Phil Kagi, I think a couple of days ago, just him doing an instrumental on the stage, and he remains one of the greatest guitar players on planet Earth. Christian artist. He actually deserves to be much more well-known than he actually is. And, you know, you'll find talented people and you'll find some catchy tunes, especially, once they started to get some budgets and they weren't being made in people's basements. But when the big money started to come in the mid-1990s and the format really grew, there are some, I still kind of like the sound of Third Day. There was a song that For Him did with lead singer of Yes called The Only Thing I Need. I don't know why I've got a soft spot for that song. Some old Raz Band, you know. But at the end of the day, I can't get past the fact that I know that they are selling lies to people. I know that they're selling this love, joy, happiness, peace, heaven message to people when that's not at all the message that is in the Bible and the core foundation of Christianity. Those things are in there. But Christianity at its core is a fear cult. I don't want to go to hell. God will unleash his wrath upon me. Love me or I will burn you. That is Christianity's core message. And the rest is just marketing. 864, thanks for waiting on me. You're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. Who's this?
Caitlin, I've been listening to your podcast for a very long time.
Thank you. You're a veteran. Thank you for listening.
I had wanted to talk about Kavanaugh. One thing that was just like, ugh, awful to watch was Senator Lindsey Graham, his performance. just the shame as a South Carolinian is.
Describe it for those who didn't see what you and I saw.
It was kind of like if Kavanaugh was like a man baby, Graham was more like a little troll goblin kind of guy. like Kavanaugh, very not composed. I can't even remember what he said, but it was so.
It was like he was his character witness. He was just trying to tell everybody what a great and wonderful man he was, and it was very much an emotional kind of an outburst.
It really was. It was strange to watch him like react that way and just be like, "Wow, he holds such a position of power." He's made impacts that could impact like me getting a job like after college. And it's crazy to think about that. But I hate watching him defend a guy like Evan.
Did you see sort of any symbolism in the one camera that's on all the senators and lawmakers, and it's all a bunch of pasty white guys, well, mostly a bunch of pasty white guys. And then you flip around and you see all the women.
Definitely a historical piece of imagery, I would say for sure. We're living in a very transformative time where I think we're kind of moving out of a lot of the oppression that was going on during the nuclear family kind of time. Yeah. And so the main people that are pushing back are kind of like boomers. It's so funny because my parents, I'm in college right now. I live with my parents and they praise him constantly. seeing his performance, I kind of just want to sit him down and be like, I want you to see how our senator reacted to this situation.
What does that do to you? I mean, do you just want to burst into flames when you see mom and dad? You were like, oh, Lindsey Graham's amazing.
I love them to pieces, but, you know, they're very religious, big on they have multiple books on George Bush and Reagan and all that stuff.
So here you are in college. You're out there among all them liberal, secular, free-thinking people.
I am.
Do they have any inclination that you might not be towing the political line?
Oh, for sure. No, I am. Because living in the area I do, it's been difficult most of my life because I'm a lesbian and I have autism. So living in the South through most of my childhood, neither of those facts about me were taken to very well. I think religion definitely contributed to the kind of systematic silencing of my autistic traits and such, for sure. I live in the Bible Belt.
If I may ask, what form does the autism take for you? I mean, because I thought autism, and educate me if you would, but I thought it was sort of, it affected you socially, but you don't seem to have that problem. How does it manifest for you?
It definitely does socially affect me, but the way that I wasn't diagnosed until only about a year ago. I was diagnosed with ADHD, but I knew like throughout my life that wasn't a sufficient diagnosis. There was something else. And one thing that's very common for women on the autism spectrum, especially that are late diagnosis, is masking and actually putting on a really good neurotypical performance. But it definitely, wow. In the South, I think at the point I was like trying to somehow form, I'm just kind of rambling, but in the South, there's such a mentality of like, you have to fall in line and be this certain way, especially in like the upper middle class. There's that kind of weird traditional Southern thing of like, be a proper woman. And so there's definitely a lot of women down here who are like back to Kavanaugh, like, defending him, and there are some pretty wild mindsets down here.
Did you see that YouTube video of the mom with her two teenage girls? And she was like, I tell my girls, it's just a fact of life. You know, women get groped. I was yelling at the monitor. I was just screaming at the monitor. Like, what message are you sending to them and everybody in the vicinity of them? And again, it's a symptom, I think, of a much deeper problem. Ultimately, at the end of the day, though, I'd like to think that people will come to their senses. Everybody will hit the brakes. And in the highest court of the land, we'll see some moral people, good, respectful people, whoever they are, who aren't just simply political pawns who are lying about their past on the court itself. So I don't know. Do you have any optimism at all about the future? What do you think?
I do. I really do. I think that a big thing with a lot of moms in the South, like my mom is kind of like this, but not quite to the extent of the women in the videos, is there's a lot of internalized misogyny, I think. I think like they've a lot of these women have spent their whole lives being told by like the audience that had to be spoken to recently in court, crusty old white men. And you know, and you know, I think that I think these women have spent their whole lives being told that it's normal and being and so they tell their daughters that and they think that that's just facts. And I think that as generations get older and our next generation kind of starts to actually impact how things are being handled, I think that things will get better. But I think that there is just this attitude in the South that is very echo chamber and kind of really hard to break through that.
Well, plus they've got God telling them that man is the head of the house and the woman submits to the man. I remember that graphic in one of the old Bill Gothard books. It shows God, he's the umbrella, and then under God is man, and then woman, and then the children, and everybody under man is submitting to him as he submits to God. So they've been taught that an act of obedience to God is to just shut up and do what their husband says. It's pathetic. Hey, do me a favor, would you? Don't ever behave. Like, I know you're surrounded by all these women who behave. Just don't behave. I like you better the way you are, okay?
Thank you.
So I just want to throw that out there.
Thank you, Seth.
Well, if I may, you are a great communicator. Whatever boundaries you've had to sort of cross to be able to overcome the autism, however it's affected you, whatever you're doing is working. You are a great communicator. You're a lot of fun to talk to on the radio, and I think you've been a great and entertaining call for the audience as well. So well done, and let's do this again, okay?
Thank you very much, Seth. It was great to talk to you.
Hope it's okay that I ask about those types of things. I'm just curious, right? You know, I think that's how we learn sometimes. At least it's how I learn. If you have a contribution for an upcoming show, specifically I'm going to do ghost stories in the middle of October, shoot those to me. I'll give you, in fact, if you give me a story that I use for the broadcast, I'll give you a promo code for a free audiobook copy on Audible for ghost stories. I've got a few that I've got lined up, but I could sure use a few more. And if you know some good ones, please let me know. Seth@thethinkingatheist.com or podcast@thethinkingatheist.com. You can share the link. It doesn't have to be original, but just a story that you like that we may not have used before. Also, and let me just throw this out. You may have noticed with the redesign of thethinkingatheist.com, the streamlining of the website, I have removed, temporarily, I've removed the section called Refuting the Bible. And it's something that's been available in different incarnations over the course of several years, where we go through and debunk the Bible on historical and moral grounds. On every level, we try to tackle it. Well, we did a searchable database for that page, but it didn't work out very well. So we're going to go back. I'm actually going to end up, I think, releasing it as its own freestanding website in early 2019. And we're going to provide that as an online resource for people refuting the Bible. But I'm looking for researchers who can help us go book by book. I've got my research here. I've got all the stuff that I've accumulated. But many hands make for lighter work. I have so many deadlines, I don't want to cheat the site by just blowing through it. And so I'm looking for people who can help go through from Genesis to and through Revelation, from the outside of the Bible, looking at the historicity of Scripture, who wrote the books of the Bible, do they jive with other historical events, not just the morality and the contradictions, but just almost there won't ever be a comprehensive look at it, but something that people can use when they are interested in understanding why we reject the Bible as a historical, scientific, and moral framework. And so if you know somebody who's interested in being part of that team, drop me an email to seth@thethinkingatheist.com. I'm going to be assembling some folks here in the next couple of months, and I think we'll begin to tackle it probably as we get closer to 2019 for a release probably first or second quarter of next year. So lots to do, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your support. And I will see you back here next time on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast.
Follow the Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on the Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.